God calls us to wholeheartedly live for Him, to love people in the way that is truly centered on others. Ladies, today on Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth Elliott shares another lesson in following the Master, the one who came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give His life as a ransom for many. Here's Elizabeth Elliott.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, reading another Christmas story today. This one is called Davy's Christmas, and it was written about 100 years ago by my great aunt. Her name was Annie Trumbull Slauson. She lived in New York, but she spent her summers in New England, and she was rather a well-known writer in her day. And all her stories are in what was then New England dialect. Here's the story of Davy's Christmas. "Yes, ma'am. Of course I'll tell you as well as I know how, but there ain't much to tell. As for the change you say's come over Anderson, why, 'twasn't me that done that, you know. You see, I was raised where they said a good deal by Christmas, the real part of it, I mean. All the children knew what it was kept for, and whose birthday 'twas, and why folks give presents that day. And we hung up our stockings at home, and had a tree for the Sunday school, and carols, and texts, and all that. Somehow I never knew, or anyway stopped to think, about there being other places where nobody done this, nor took any notice of Christmas at all. So when we moved way out west to Anderson that fall, and I began to look ahead and lay plans what I should do for Christmas, 'twas a big surprise to me to find none of the boys and girls knew what I was driving at. 'Twas a little place anyway, you know, and there wa'n't many young folks. There wasn't a church or a Sunday school there neither. But somehow that didn't seem to trouble me so much at first as the other thing, that they didn't have any Christmas. You see, I'd had it all my life, and I thought 'twas just beautiful. Why, 'twas almost everything, or at any rate the beginning of everything. So I thought and thought about it, and when I'd got things a little straightened out in my head, I went to Mother. You know Mother, so I needn't tell you how good she was about it, nor how she entered right into it with me. That's her way, ain't it, ma'am? She always enters into things so when you want her to. And she talked to Father for me. That's one good thing about mothers, they're talking to your fathers for you. And he come into it, too. We was going to have a real Christmas, a real one for the folks there in Anderson. Now, we weren't rich, you know, but we was pretty well-to-do, and we had a nice little home fitted up with all our things from the old place. I'd fetched along my books and cards and maps and pictures and the carols we used to sing, and I had some of the things we used to dress the Christmas tree with, bright little balls and shiny stuff and little bits of candles, so we could have a tree, and there hadn't anybody there ever seen one. Mother had her melodeon, that's a little organ, and she said she'd play the carols and we'd all sing them together, and Father, he promised to talk a little to the folks about the day and what it meant to everybody. We meant to give presents too, just little cheap ones, of course, but something anyway to every single boy and girl there. You bet I did enjoy getting up that thing. I tell you, 'twas fun keeping it so secret and thinking how surprised they'd be and all. Father and Mother helped, but I done most of it myself. For Father had his regular work to do, and Mother had the baby to tend to, little Joshua, you know. But 'twas all ready at last. I'd picked out a real pretty little tree up on the hill, and Father'd cut it down for me, and there 'twas now, standing up in the best room, all shiny with gilt and silver paper, and the little tin balls of different colors swinging on the branches, and there was red apples and pine cones and the little candles from home all ready to light. 'Twas dreadful pretty. There was little presents for 'em all, mostly things that I'd had given to me, Christmases and birthdays and so on, books and picture cards and one or two little games, things I was glad enough to give away to them that had so little. So you see what a splendid Christmas 'twas going to be, just the thing to show 'em what it meant, and make 'em always keep it afterwards, some way or another. Oh, dear me. It's 3 whole years ago now, but most makes me cry to think what happened, and how 'twas all every single bit of that beautiful plan spoiled. It's too dreadful to say much about. The folks was to come Christmas Eve for the treat, and just the night before that, the 23rd of December, our house catched fire, and burnt up. Every single thing was burnt, except the clothes we put on in a hurry, and we just saved our own lives. That was about all. As 'twas, poor father got hurt real bad trying to save things. His hands and arms was all blistered and burnt, and his face was scorched, and mother, she catched a dreadful cold and most lost her voice. First, I couldn't think of anything but the house and the furniture and things and a poor father and how glad I was we was all alive, mother and little Joshua and all. But after a spell, it come over me all of a sudden, Christmas and the time we'd been going to have for the folks. The tree and everything on it was burnt up. The house and best room where the company was to be, the melodeon and even the singing books that had the carols in them, everything, every single thing was gone. Even the barn. And Jack, our dear old horse, went too. Only the cowhouse that stood by itself a little ways off didn't burn. Our little Jersey cows, Whitefoot and Buttercup, was saved. That was better than nothing. It had been a house once where folks lived, but it got old and shackly, and some of it tumbled down, and the rest of it made a good place for the cows. There was a fireplace and a chimney to it. So we had a place to go, such as 'twas. The people round there was all pretty poor. Nobody lived very nearby. They asked us to come and was pleasant enough about it, but we thought we hadn't better do it as long as we could take care of ourselves. So we settled down that night as well as we could in the cowhouse, with a big fire to keep us warm and some blankets and things that the folks lent us. Next morning, the very day before Christmas, you know, just as quick as I got a chance to talk with Mother, I had to let it all out. I wasn't as big then as I be now, and I couldn't, to save my life, keep from crying like a baby when I spoke about the Christmas. I kept saying, how could God have done such a thing when we was just a-going to learn the Anderson folks about the birthday and what it all meant? Oh, I says, how could he do it? Well, Mother, she entered into it, her way, you know. She let me see she allowed for my being disappointed. But she said she knew I'd come round to seeing 'twas all right somehow if he had done it. And she said he didn't need us nor anybody else to learn the Anderson folks about Christmas. He could show him himself if 'twas best for him to know. And she said I must be a good boy and give it up, and maybe next year I'd have another chance. I tried to be good so as not to trouble her. I helped her with Father and little Joshua, and tried to make things comfortable. But I was thinking and thinking all day about the folks, and how they'd got to wait a whole long year to see what Christmas was. Come along towards noon, I says to Mother, couldn't I see if someone wouldn't let me have one of their rooms, and maybe their melodeon, and some of the people help me a little and have just some sort of a Christmas time? Well, even if we couldn't have a tree and presents, she said I could try, if my heart was set on it. But 'twasn't any good. Folks was willing to come to a treat, but they wouldn't help get it up. I even went to the little tavern at the corners, but they said 'twas full that night and they couldn't be bothered. I went home, if you could call it home, and I sat down on the floor and laid my head down on Mother's lap, she's got such a nice lap, and told her all about it. She was real good. But she didn't know how to help me. She see herself I'd got to give the whole thing up. But she whispers to me, stroking my head, she says, tell God all about it, Davy. So I done it right there, just as I was, with my head in Mother's lap. When I got up, I says, well, Mother, I've got to give it up, and I'm going to stand it like a man. But maybe, I says, some of the folks will come anyway, them that lives a good ways off and hasn't heard about the fire. And she says, well, if they do, Davy, we'll be glad to see him, though this isn't much of a place to have company. What do you think? Come evening, if the boys and girls and the grown folks, too, didn't begin to come along. You see, I'd invited them some days before and hadn't took back the invitations. And I suppose, even if they knew we didn't expect them, they was curious to see what we'd do, and to look at the burnt house and all. Why, most everybody round there come, seems to me. 'Twas a real nice night. There wasn't any moon, but I never see the stars shining brighter. I recollect that 'cause Father'd been telling me about the stars that winter, and I'd took to noticing them. And as I come in that night, I looked up and see how bright they was, particular one big one Father called the Evening Star. The folks didn't come in at first. They kind of stood around outside, and when I went out to speak to them, they said they didn't want to trouble us, but they was round that way, and they thought they'd just see if they could do anything for us. 'Twas pretty cold, and I couldn't bear to see them standing outdoors so long, so I run back inside and asked Mother if I couldn't bring them in. There wasn't any seats, to be sure, but 'twas warm, and it seemed politer anyway. Mother said, "Of course I could. Let them come in." She didn't mind. They was a little backward at first, appeared to feel a mite bashful. But by and by, one after another stepped inside. I felt a little foolish myself, and I didn't know just what to say first off. But Jim Bissell, a rough sort of boy from the Corners, he begun to laugh, and he says out loud, "Where's your Christmas, as you call it, Dave? What's it all about, anyway?" And then, I don't know this to this day how I ever picked up courage for it, but it come into my head just to tell him something, if 'twas only the leastest bit, about the day that was coming tomorrow. I just shut up my eyes 1 second, and then I wet my lips and I begun. I told him what I'd meant to do, and how 'twas all spoiled, and how dreadful sorry I was. I said I'd tried to get some other place to hold the meeting in, but I couldn't, and I'd tried the tavern at the Corners, but there wasn't any room for it there. And then I put it as well as I could about how Father was laid up and he couldn't talk to him, and that I wasn't big enough to explain things myself. But I says, "I can read you about it, only I ain't no great of a reader." And then comes over me all of a sudden that our Bibles was all burned up. It just seemed as if 'twas meant them folks shouldn't learn about Christmas that year, and I'd better give it up. But Mother says in a softly voice, she was just back of me, she says, "Don't you know some verses, Davy?" I knew I did, for I'd said them at a Christmas tree the year before. And that's as far as I'm going to read in today's part of Davy's Christmas. I think maybe you can guess what Davy was going to read to that group of townsfolk who had come to his Christmas party.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliot has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.